You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you travel better. I've got a special favor to ask this week if you're listening to the episode, you know, right around when we launch it. By the time this episode goes live on Wednesday, my friend Summer and I will be in the midst of a crazy challenge. We're attempting to ride every ride at Disney World in one day for a great charity. The charity is called Give Kids the World. They help critically ill children and their families have a free vacation in Orlando where they can create unbelievable memories. If this sounds like something you're interested in supporting, I'm asking for a $1 donation for every ride I complete. There are 48 rides, so a $1 pledge would mean a $48 donation if I'm able to hit all of them. I did a test run a few weeks ago and had some problems and still managed to get to 41. That would go a long way to making special memories for a child that definitely could use a few. You can check out my blog, Pizza in Motion, for all the details. Search for Disney on my site if you're having trouble finding the information. We'll be live tweeting our progress for about 16 hours on Wednesday and should find time to squeeze a few videos out on Instagram as well. Hope you'll follow along at Pizza in Motion on both of those channels. Up this week on the podcast, we start out with a Disney segment. Joe from Disney Deciphered is back to talk about Disney cruises. If you haven't tuned into their podcast yet, Joe and Leslie have a great 15-minute fun, small, short episode theme where they cover a different aspect of Disney every week. Joe had his opportunity to go on a second Disney cruise. I still haven't been on one. It's definitely still on my bucket list. If you want to hear all the great things that there are on a Disney cruise, definitely tune in for that segment. After that, we have Jen back from Deals We Like to talk about a Hilton Status Match offer you should definitely give a look at. It's really not that hard to qualify for, and you can get yourself some great perks. Finally, we'll finish up with Trevor from Tagging Miles to talk about my upcoming trip to Australia. That's Trevor's favorite place, and he's got strong opinions on where we should go. If you have any suggestions on where we should go on our family Australia trip next year, I'd love it if you'd send them my way. Hit me up on Twitter at Pizza in Motion or send me an email at ed@pizzainmotion. Don't forget to send us your questions about travel. We'd love to read them on the air and give you a bit of help with your travels. You can find us on social media. You can search Miles to Go Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can always email us at the show at milestogopodcast@gmail.com. Lastly, you can help us by subscribing to the podcast wherever you're listening, like Apple Podcast or Google Podcast, and leave us a rating and a comment. We read all of your comments, and by subscribing and rating the podcast, you're helping us reach more listeners. With that, we're going to step aside for a quick break. We'll be right back. Hope you enjoy the show. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Hey, welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. I've got Joe Chung back on with me of Disney Deciphered, Saverosity, Observation Deck, As the Joe Flies, just a whole big collection of stuff. He's been on the podcast with me before, and I've been on his Disney Deciphered podcast, which I highly recommend for you Disney geeks. Joe, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having me, Ed. And as of last week, a new site. Again, Miles to the Magic, talking about using miles and points for your Disney vacations. So,
man,
I know I feel like I should be more focused, but I don't know. What can I say? That one I have two great partners in Bob Dwyer from Milenomics and Rachel Berkey, a moderator at War Travel 101. So it should be less work for that one.
Yeah, I feel like you're getting close to being able to fill up a NASCAR car with logos of all your sites. So I think you're definitely moving in the right direction there.
Or wrong direction, depending on your perspective. But anyway, you didn't bring me on here to plug myself. So what's up?
Well, we put you on plug yourself a little bit. But no, we're going to talk about something that I'm envious of, and that's Disney cruises and the fact that you've been on one. It's sort of been on our radar. You know, we started cruising right before our kids were born and have cruised up through just before the birth of our second child, but never been on a Disney cruise. And you got back from one just about a month ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. I was on a 4-night cruise out of Port Canaveral on the Disney Dream. And so, you know, it was their standard midweek cruise, stopped by Nassau in the Bahamas, Castaway Key, Disney's private island in the Bahamas. And then also they had a day at sea. And so, yeah, it was a great time.
So how far in advance did you book the cruise?
Yeah, so I booked it just a little bit over a year in advance. I booked it last May. And so I actually booked it using the Citi Thank You portal. So I had to call and go get to the cruises and tours desk. And so, you know, what that allowed me to do, I had the Citi Thank You Premier at the time. And so I was able to apply my Citi Thank You points, which, you know, I found that I was never using. So I had about 100,000 of them. And so I was able to use that to be worth $1,250 towards my deposit. And since I wasn't going to use those points anyway, it basically felt like free money to me, even though I know that's not what it actually was. And so it was pretty far in advance with Disney cruises.
For sure.
For the most part, the further you book in advance, the cheaper it's going to be. The prices generally just go up and up and up, unless you're like on really low season. Sometimes they have these guaranteed staterooms that are a little bit cheaper. You don't get to choose your stateroom, but that's one way people who have flexibility save money. But when you have a family of five, you need to book. We booked this before our daughter was even born. Our third daughter, our second daughter, third child was even born. And so, you know, she was just infant for 5 months on the reservation.
Yeah. And for those of you who are thinking about getting into cruising and haven't figured it out yet, I would highly recommend the same, whatever cruise line you're booking with. You do want to look at booking early. Cruise ships do have, the cruise companies do sometimes have protection for price reductions, though I haven't seen that very much as of late. Not the protection, but price reductions in general. And I, you know, everything I've heard about Disney cruises is huge demand, prices unlikely to go down, you know, close to booking. So what made you choose the Disney Dream and this 4-day cruise?
Yeah, so my daughter and I went with my parents on a 3-night cruise on the Disney Wonder with the Social Media Moms Conference back in February 2017. Mm-hmm. And my daughter and I both really loved it. And my parents, they enjoyed it as well, although they were there to help with her. And so, you know, a couple of families were talking about doing a trip together. And one of those other families had done Disney cruises before. And so basically between myself and that other family, we kind of pushed the other 1.5 family units into going on a Disney cruise. And so, yeah, so it was three families together. And that was a lot of fun too. Just, you know, there was 8 kids between the 6 adults. And so, you know, that was a blast to have on the Disney cruise. Hectic and crazy, but also a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I do like that about cruises, not just Disney, that you everybody can sort of, you know, go their own way when they need to go their own way, but obviously get together for things. You know, do you feel, you know, overall, I've heard great things about Disney cruises. Do you feel like you got the right amount of value out of what you spent for the ship?
Yeah, it's tough to kind of, you know, I was talking to someone about this. You know, the thing that I really love about Disney cruises, besides how good they are for kids, which, you know, it's Disney, so that's kind of what you expect. But the thing that I really appreciate about it is that you definitely pay more upfront, and the prices are definitely going up. I think Len Testa from Touring Plans said that over the past 3 years, the price has gone up like 150% or something insane, maybe 50%. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the nice thing is, though, from other experiences that I've read, like if you go on Royal Caribbean or if you go on Norwegian, they're like constantly trying to upsell you. Like they're trying to sell you this drink package. You know, there's a bunch of restaurants that you can't eat in unless you pay an upcharge. With Disney, that's none of that. There was none of that. And in both my experiences, there has never been any of that. I think as a group of three families, we were upsold once out of the three families. And that was only when my wife went to the spa. They asked her if she wanted other treatments. And I really like, you know, I don't know exactly what my price point is, but there is a price that I'm willing to pay to not be bothered about asking for more money. And so I really appreciated that about Disney cruise. And it was also like amazing for the kids. They loved every minute of it. My daughter is still talking about it. You know, they're asking me when we can go back, and I'm like, maybe you should get a job as a 5-year-old. But you know, and the kids just had so much fun. And, you know, I think it really, And it's also really nice because our oldest daughter, like, is actually my son too, but they're forming memories now, and they have this memory with their friends and their family. And so, you know, it's just an amazing experience.
So what did you think of, Disney's Island down in the Caribbean, Castaway Cay?
Yeah. So people like really love it and rave about it. I would say that I am of the mind that it's like a B+, whereas people like think it's like an A. I really enjoy it. I like being able to get off at a destination and, you know that everyone on the island is from Disney. You know, again, people aren't upselling you things. People aren't trying to, like, my wife got out of Nassau and they were off the boat for like 20 minutes. And she said like five different people came up to her and trying to sell her things. You know, you don't have to worry about that on Castaway Cay. But, you know, I think it's definitely like the family beach. It's going to be crazy. It's like going to be any beach where there are families. There's like a lot of stuff going on. The adults only beach is very serene. It's called Serenity Bay, and the name is very apt. But, you know, we had three kids, and so it was tough to do that. What I actually did, since this was my second time at Castaway Cay, I actually ended up taking the baby back to the ship early, and I had a nice meal at Cabanas, which is the buffet restaurant on the ship, just alone with her. And I really actually appreciated that time with the baby. You know, I'm not generally a beach guy. You know, I'm only go to the beach because everyone else in my family loves the beach. One more thing about Castaway Cay, I did take my daughter on Pelican Plunge, which is the big water slide, and that was a ton of fun. Uh-huh. Although she may or may not have been crying when she got off of it, because I think it was a little fast for her. But she was really brave. I mean, she did it. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So have you cruised on something other than Disney?
Not since I was a kid. So I went on an Alaska cruise on Norwegian Cruise Line when I was a kid, and we did a river cruise. You know, it's kind of like our goodbye cruise to my grandfather, because he was sick at the time, on the Rhine. And so I loved those experiences when I was a kid, but as an adult, I've only done a Disney Cruise Line twice.
Yeah, and we're the other side. We've cruised a bunch on Royal, and there's some upselling there, but I think, you know, if I wasn't going to cruise Disney, which is still on our bucket list, Royal is where I'd go of the cruise lines that we've had experience with. We feel like there's less of that that upselling, if you will. But, you know, from everything I've heard from everyone, it's worth the extra money for a Disney cruise. You know, do you think, you know, given what you spent, I know you guys chose a 4-day cruise. Did you choose a longer Disney cruise the first time, or was it another shorter cruise?
Yeah, it was shorter. I think personally, I would prefer like a longer cruise, maybe 5 or 6 days. I think 7 might be pushing it. But, you know, it's one of those things where, kind of like the Disney parks, like as you get to 5, 6, 7, the incremental cost is lower. And so, you know, and they have the like 14-day cruise that goes through the Panama Canal.
Yeah, I know somebody that's done that. Well, not the Panama, but they've done a 14-day, I think it's European one.
Yeah. Like, or they go like transatlantic to Europe. And yeah, those seem like a lot of fun, but I don't think I could get my wife on the ship for that long. Although she definitely, I think I've said on this podcast, but maybe not, but she's not like the biggest Disney fan, but she did really appreciate Disney Cruise Line and how well they took care of her family. I should say that it is not easy to cruise with a baby, because you want to be like out there relaxing, but you're taking care of a baby. You know, it's not something that, you know, we enjoyed it, but I understand that's not a lot something that many people are going to be seeking out. I will say that Disney Cruise Line was just really amazing with the baby, especially at mealtimes. You know, so you have the same server for every night at dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they rotate with you. So rotational dining, which I think is standard on cruise lines now, but Disney kind of started it. And so, you know, the first night he was like, oh, what does the baby want to eat? And my wife's like, oh, maybe some avocado. And then like 2 minutes later, he was up with a bowl of avocado. And I was like, that's a lot of avocado. He's like, well, the chef just cut up an entire avocado and gave it to you. The next day we showed up at dinner and there was already avocado on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then he asked us what we wanted the next day. And so like the third night there was blueberries, and the fourth night there was raspberries. And it's just like, you know, they just took such good care. Like, we never had to worry about feeding the baby, which was funny because, you know, we spent 2 nights at the Polynesian after the cruise, and you think the Polynesian, it's like a deluxe resort, it's really nice, but all of a sudden we were stressing out about what to feed the baby. And like, while we were on the cruise for 4 nights, we didn't worry about that at all.
Yeah.
And that was, that really made cruising with a baby a lot easier.
Yeah, that's awesome. We didn't want to tackle cruising with a baby, but we've gone probably a bit too long now because our oldest is 7, so we do need to get back to it. But Disney cruises have sort of been on the radar, and I almost pulled the trigger on one of the positioning cruises for this coming January and just ended up not doing it. So still on the radar, and definitely your experiences are pushing me closer and closer to hitting that button. Do you have another Disney cruise in mind?
Yeah, so I actually booked a placeholder and I transferred it to Chase, who at the time could book Disney cruises. And so I'm not sure what's going on with that, but technically I was going to be able to use the 10% off, because if you put a deposit down for your next cruise, you can use it for,
right.
You can, you know, anyway, whatever. I don't want to talk about that. It's too depressing. But my goal is to hopefully get back on a cruise ship within the next 2 years. But if not, you know, I'll let that deposit go. I will say, Ed, if you're looking to save some money, one thing that I've been doing is basically touringplans.com, which is a Disney planning website. Every week they release like kind of cruise news. But what they'll do is every single week they will highlight all of the kind of discounts, the last minute discounts for Disney cruises that are out there. So like those guaranteed staterooms that cost less money, but you know, you can still book them. And you know, sometimes they're at like 2 months out at the most. And if you have that kind of flexibility, that's a great way to save money. There's, you know, so every week it's called the Disney Cruise Line Weekly or something like that. Uh-huh. But you can look out for that. And that is something I monitor just to, you know, dream and pretend that I could go on a cruise a month from now, which is of course false.
Touring Plans is a great resource for a lot of things. I haven't gotten to them with cruises yet, but I'll definitely have to add that to my list. And I would echo the guaranteed stateroom trick. I think that works as long as you don't have to have rooms that are beside each other, you know, which families sometimes do, don't get me wrong. But if you don't need two rooms beside each other, a guaranteed stateroom can be a great option to save, you know, just a little bit of money in your cruise. Joe, thanks a ton for hopping on with us and talking Disney cruises. You've got me jealous and envious and thinking about doing it myself. When you're not on here or on one of the 17 sites that we just went through that you're authoring, tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can check out, I'll just do two things. You can check out the Disney planning podcast that Leslie Harvey from Trips with Tykes and I have. That's DisneyDeciphered.com. And if you have any questions about cruising, Disney, miles and points, and traveling family in general, you can hit me up on Twitter at AsTheJoeFlies.
I'll pump the other podcast too, Save Rossi's Observation Deck, where I've been on a couple times with both you and Trevor, which was a ton of fun. And you know, we'll have to look up and talk about the new blog the next time you're back on the podcast. Thanks again for being on, man.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me back.
All right, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, while we take a quick break from Miles to Go, I wanted to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts. If you're enjoying my podcast, I think you'll also like Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Steven, Seth, and Foz are the hosts of the first travel podcast I ever listened to. Seth has already been a guest on Miles to Go a few times, and I'm hoping to have Steven and Foz on here at some point as well. These guys know the travel industry. You'll find them talking about cool new airplanes, crazy trips they're taking, Stroop waffles, and the best way to get from here to there. Though, given the name of their podcast, they don't specialize in the shortest way to get you there. At any rate, you can find Dots Lines at moredotsmorelines.com or on Apple Podcasts. Now, back to the show. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. And again, this week we've got Jen back from Deals We Like to cover another It's a Big Deal segment for us. Hey, Jen, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, thanks for being on. And we're talking Hilton status matches today. And this one doesn't have an expiration date, so we're definitely going to encourage folks to get to as quickly as possible because it could disappear. But lay out for folks how they can get a free Hilton status match through 2020.
Yes. So Hilton's running a promotion right now. If you have status with another hotel chain, and if you send them proof that you have that status, they will update your account to match an equivalent status for the next 90 days. Now, if you're able to stay 4 times, you'll get gold status until February of 2020. Or if you can stay 8 times, you'll get diamond status until that same February of 2020 date, which is pretty great. So if you have some upcoming Hilton stays, you know, try to time it appropriately. As Ed said, we don't know exactly when this promotion is going through. They've definitely had it for quite some time. They've had it many times over the past, you know, few years. So it's not a act now or, you know, never again type of promotion, but you definitely do want to try to time it properly and take advantage of it as soon as you can.
And I was just looking through this briefly, so I didn't get through all the details, but I didn't see anything that said that there was a required minimum length of stay. So can, you know, can folks just stay one night and have that count as one of their 4 or 8 stays?
Yes, there's no minimum, but do keep in mind that it's 4 stays. So 4 nights
right.
will not get you that status. It is 4 individual stays with no minimum than a number of nights that qualify for that stay. So 4 separate stays of 1 night each will get you that gold status or the 8 nights or the 8 stays. Sorry, the nights and stays things can get sometimes confusing.
Yeah. And for folks who, you know, for folks who are, you know, potentially, you know, business travelers, or if you do have a few family vacations, just a thought, there aren't too many opportunities anymore that you find where what we call hotel hopping makes a ton of sense. And what I mean by hotel hopping is, you know, moving back and forth between properties where maybe you stay at a Hampton Inn on night 1 of a 3-night stay, and then you stay across the street at the Embassy Suites that happens to be in the same neighborhood that's also a Hilton chain property on the second night. And then on the third night, you bounce back to that same Hampton Inn again. As long as they're not consecutive nights at the same property, that 3 nights actually qualifies for 3 stays. And, you know, we don't find many opportunities where that makes a ton of sense, but here to be able to earn diamond status for, you know, potentially almost 18 months, it could be worth doing a little hotel hopping to lock up some status.
Absolutely. And in my post, I kind of wrote out what status at another chain is equivalent to Hilton Gold and Hilton Diamond. And one other thing I did want to point out is that when you send in your proof that you have that status, they do want to see that you've at least completed 1 night at that hotel chain within the past 12 months. So you will need to show that as well. Many years ago, they never used to require that, and they started adding that because many people have status just by, you know, having the credit card for another hotel chain. So there is that requirement as well. And definitely don't wait until the, you know, 11th hour to sign up, as it will take a few days for them to register and update in your account. So if you want that status when you have a upcoming hotel stay, you know, definitely give Hilton some time to process your request.
Awesome. Well, I think this is a great deal for folks who have some travel coming up. You know, it's not that diamond status is the most rewarding status out there. Both gold and diamond do come with enough benefits, though, that it's worth thinking about moving a few stays over, especially, you know, if you were listening to Jen and I a few weeks ago, you'll know that the current round of hotel promos isn't overly motivating. So this could be the motivator to get you to move some business from, say, you know, IHG or Marriott over to Hilton to lock up some status.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, Jen, thanks again for being on with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Ed.
All right. We'll be right back, guys, on the Miles to Go podcast. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. I've got Trevor with me, who is the primary author at Tagging Miles and also a partner in crime on Saverosity's Observation Deck, both places you've found me before. Trevor saw on my blog probably just about 2 weeks ago now that I had booked some tickets to Australia for my family. And he jumped in and said, hey, you know, do you want some advice on where to go and what to do? And I said, absolutely. And he suggested, like, well, let's turn it into a podcast segment, which I think is a great idea. I've got a lot of planning to do, and can't remember the last family trip I booked a year ahead of time. So I think we got plenty of time to plan it, but let's get it started. Trevor, thanks for being back on the podcast with us.
Ed, I'm just so happy to be back on the podcast, number one. And number two, I'm just so happy to be able to talk with you about my most favorite country other than the U.S. in the world, Australia.
Yeah, it's funny because I said, you know, when I booked that trip that, you know, Italy is where, you know, where my heart lies, no question. But, you know, if I was given two hearts, I think I'd probably give the second one to Australia. So, you know, I'm eager to be going back, thrilled to be bringing the family. You know, but first and foremost, how are you doing? Where are you hanging out? What's on the radar? Actually, I think you told me before we logged on that you guys are going overseas to Hong Kong.
Yeah. So we've been pretty busy over the past few weeks and coming few weeks, although we're really excited tomorrow, actually, and I don't know when this podcast is actually going to publish, but we're actually going to be flying in the first week of Cathay Pacific's Dulles to Hong Kong direct flight on the A350-1000.
Yeah.
And we're really excited. This is a brand new aircraft type for us. We've flown on the A350, I think 800, mm-hmm. which is what I think Qatar flies, but we haven't flown on the 1000. And the fact that the Cathay Pacific is flying from our home airport at Dulles is just super exciting.
Yeah, it is. And it's a flight that I need to get on my radar. I haven't really had it on my radar, although Seth, Wandering Aramean, was, I think he was supposed to be on the inaugural and had to bag it because of weather delays. But it's sort of like on the fringes of my radar. So I'll be interested to hear how you like it when you get back. And maybe that plane will have a Cathay Pacific's name spelled correctly on it.
One would hope. One thing aside, as far as for Seth, I mean, the inaugural left 4 or 5 hours late because of that typhoon that just really hit Hong Kong. We've got friends that live in Hong Kong, and I mean, just a carnage that typhoon left. Our hearts go out to them, and we're, you know, really excited to be able to go visit and hopefully kind of bring some money to kind of put into the economy as they're trying to rebuild.
Yeah, I agree. It does sound pretty bad, and that was part of the issue for Seth going out on the inaugural was that weather. So I'll certainly cross my fingers and hope that the recovery there is quick. Gosh knows we've seen enough devastation from storms over the last few years. You know, as far as Australia goes, I thought one of the interesting things, when you and I were talking offline about getting on to record was, do I do just Sydney? Do I throw in a Melbourne or Brisbane? Do I do New Zealand? And you had some pretty strong feelings about what you thought I should do. I guess let's start there. If you knew I had 10 days and it was you dialing it up for me and the wife and kids, you know, what would you do?
So that's a really great question. Last year, my wife and I spent New Year's in Australia, and we started out in Melbourne, or Melbourne, as you know, if you kind of pronounce it as it's spelled, and we spent two nights in Melbourne, and then we drove. It's about a 4 or 5 hour drive to Canberra, which is the capital. The Australia Capital Territory, I think, is how they refer to it.
Yeah.
Nobody ever really goes to Canberra. It's an interesting kind of it again was built as a capital city, a capital territory, similar to how Washington, D.C. was built in the U.S. It was essentially a compromise because Melbourne had a very big population density and Sydney had a big population density, and neither of the two wanted to give the other the capital. And so Parliament looks absolutely gorgeous. And if you're standing in Parliament, you can see the I think it's the Mayor's House of Canberra or whatever they call that, the town hall. And it looks really quite beautiful. It's a little bit reminiscent of DC. But the thing in Canberra that really jumped out for us was the kind of small little wineries in the mountains.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I will say there is a wonderful Costco very close to the airport. there's at least one Costco in Melbourne. There's a Costco in Canberra. There's two Costcos in Sydney, and all of them are worth a visit. We went to, I think, at least three Costcos on our 10-day trip.
That's awesome. So I had originally thought when we were talking about doing the trip that we would do New Zealand because we have friends there, and I don't think I'm going to go over a ton of time with the entire family. So I'd love the kids to see our friends. I'm just trying to figure out how I would lay the time out. Do you think, for a first time family going to Sydney, how many days do you think you'd block?
I think reasonably you're looking at least 3 days. You're probably looking at 4 or 5 with a family because you want to do the Sydney Zoo. So that's an area that I haven't had the chance to do. We're going to do it this time. We're heading there for Christmas this year. We got those Qantas first class award flights from Dallas.
Great.
Really excited about that. But everybody that I've talked to has spent at least a day at the Sydney Zoo. I think you tack onto that a trip out to Manly, you could spend a half day or you could go, a full day. It's a gorgeous beach. In my opinion, skip Bondi Beach, go to Manly. It's just a much more enjoyable experience. Did you go to either of those when you and Michelle went most recently?
Well, I went just on my own. Michelle didn't even come, and I was on the ground for a whopping 54 hours. So, I didn't have a whole lot of an idea of what I was going to do because my goal was to try out the Qantas First Class when availability popped up. So the what I was going to do there was secondary, which I view as a bad decision on my part, to be clear. But as I was getting ready to plan the trip, a good friend of mine, Michael, said, sort of in passing, well, you don't want to do bridge climb. And I said, bridge climb, what's that? And boy, I just ended up standing up on top of the Harbor Bridge and looking down over the city was incredible. Loved it. And so from my standpoint, we're definitely going to do bridge climb with the whole family. And then, as you say, probably head out to some of the beaches. We've talked about potentially Jervis Bay, Gilbert from God Save the Points threw that out as a recommendation. So there's a handful of places that we've considered. I just hadn't thought about how many days I'd want to explore other stuff in.
It's funny that you mentioned that because Michael had been the one that kind of turned me on to the whole Sydney Zoo as well. I mean, they've got some really cool experiential stuff at the Sydney Zoo. But, thinking about the bridge climb, you've got two different areas that you want to kind of consider, that you're able to see from the bridge.
Yep.
Obviously you've got the Opera House. You can sometimes get, cheaper tickets, and they have, a variety of different shows. We just happened on our first trip, and mind you, my wife and my first trip was 80 hours on the ground.
Hmm.
And it was perhaps one of our most memorable trips to this day, 10 years later. We saw Pirates of Penzance and it was just absolutely phenomenal. Now I'm a Mariner, so of course that's going to resonate with me. But the other side of the bridge is Darling Harbour.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful out there.
Exactly. You want to share some history with the kids, with the family. There's a maritime museum that I think is just a donation, and they cover so much, of the kind of Aboriginal. They cover the British coming. They even had a section when we were there about the Great White Fleet of the U.S. And the interesting thing about the Great White Fleet in the U.S. is, once upon a time, we would paint our Navy white when we were in times of peace,
mm-hmm.
and then we'd paint the Navy gray in times of war. Now, obviously right now with the roughly 200 or 300 ship Navy, it's really kind of uneconomical to, paint the whole fleet white. But, the idea was that the Great White Fleet had visited, roughly 2/3 of the Australian population. And all they did was pull into Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
And they still had all the guns that, a normal fleet would have, but it was just a clarification of time of peace. I thought that was very interesting, and it was a pretty decent display at the time at that maritime museum. And it's not often I would offer that you learn more about U.S. history when you're traveling halfway around the world.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. Awesome. Well, any last minute tips to think about before we run out of time for our break?
Well, so I'd also offer there's a cool little place. So everybody wants to bring home some sort of souvenirs. In Sydney, you're talking about St. Paddy's Market, which is fairly close to Circular Quay.
Yeah.
That's a really great place. In Melbourne, there's a place called Queen Victoria's Market, which is really fun as well, just to kind of walk through. But you can get a lot of cool kind of, handmade souvenirs. I'm sure some of the stuff is made in China at both of the markets. But, if you're looking, if you're looking for a boomerang or any kind of, and I just lost the name of the hat. I even have one of them. They're essentially leather fedoras, but they're outback hats.
Yeah.
I mean, those are you know, the markets are the best places to get those in my experience. And it's really fun to kind of walk around and just see all the different things that they're selling.
Yeah, no, good point. And I'm sure we will come home with some boomerangs. Well, I hope you guys have an awesome trip on the A350-1000. I'm certainly a bit jealous, although I'm sure I'll notch it at some point myself. You know, when you're not hopping on the podcast with me or jetting off to Hong Kong, tell folks where they can find you.
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter most easily at TMount, T-M-O-U-N-T. I also write on taggingmiles.com and pretty frequently on Saverosity Observation Deck, which I think, Ed, you've been on a couple of times as well.
I have been, but had a bunch of fun on with both you and Joe. Well, cool. Well, you have a great trip, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Ed.
All right. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
And we're back to wrap up this week's episode with the final two pennies and a new weekly feature for my blog that we're going to try to sync up here on the podcast as well. I came up with an idea that I want to try called If You Had One Day In. Each week, I'll pick a new place and ask for help from readers and listeners to tell folks if they only had one day in a specific city or region, what they would absolutely have to do. Your suggestions can fall into two categories. Maybe you've been to this week's featured place and know the perfect activity. Or maybe it's still on your bucket list, and there's one thing you've always dreamed of doing when you get the chance to take that dream trip. Since we spoke about Sydney earlier, here's my example. If I had one day in Sydney, I'd start with a walk along the water to one of the ferry boat landings. If I was up early enough, I'd hop on a ferry boat before there was really anyone stirring, while the city was still sleeping. Standing outside, I'd watch as the ferry boat whisked me by the various landmarks, starting near the Opera House and ending in Darling Harbor. Then I'd make my way over to Bridge Climb, towering over the city with some of the most amazing views you've ever seen. After that, I'd walk through the city, exploring the nooks and crannies. If it was the weekend, I'd stop by the markets and the rocks near the Park Hyatt. After all was said and done, I'd get in line early for dinner at Mr. Wong. I'd have some prawns with pork belly in a chili, black bean, and garlic sauce. I'd think about ordering some duck, and I'd definitely add on some fried rice. That's what I'd do if I had one day in Sydney. I hope you'll help me out with suggestions, both for places you'd like to see me cover and also for suggestions so we can help readers and listeners hit all the best spots when they travel. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. If you have questions I can help answer, send them in so we can answer in a future episode. You can email us at miles2gopodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at miles2gopodcast. If you're enjoying the show, there are two things that you can help us out with. First, hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc., and leave us a comment and a rating. We read all the comments. They help us make the show better. By subscribing and rating the podcast, you help us grow our audience. Thanks again for listening, and a big thanks to Jen, Joe, and Trevor for helping me put together a great show this week. We're already putting together next week's episode, but until then, we've got miles to go.